Now everybody, let me tell you a story about Hollywood shame. Where terrible actors and scripts collide. Oh, what a mess it is on the other side. Saw the lights, camera, action begin. But all I got was a movie that plunged in a spin. From the first scene to the credits that roll. Oh, Hollywood disaster, you've taken its toll. Silver screen says cool, bad movies galore. Can't help but wonder what the hell were they making these for. Throwing some cliches to shut the predictable plot. It's a train wreck, I tell you, it's all they ever got.
And now for our feature presentation.
Welcome to the Silver Screen Cesspool, where we review the poo. And now your host, the surveyor of cinema, the mocker of moronic movies, the terror of tiny town, the last known survivor of battlefield Earth, the one of many, Alan Smithy.
When my dad was young, he used to play cowboys and Indians. Times have changed, though, and I sleep better at night knowing my kids instead play the much more racially sensitive Cowboys versus Dinosaur. And that's in no small part due to the 2015 movie Cowboys versus Dinosaur, starring one of the greatest actors of our, or any generation really, and Julia Roberts' older brother, Eric Roberts. Now, this is no Valley of the Guanji by any stretch of the imagination, but nonetheless, this movie is set in present-day Montana, so unfortunately the titular cowboys are the modern-day rodeo type and not the Wild West type. This is disappointing, but not as disappointing as if it were the starting lineup of this year's Dallas Cowboys. The movie opens with a mining company blowing up something in the mine and releasing velociraptors, who straight up kill everybody in sight. And it's fantastic that they're playing to their strengths here and not bothering with any of that pesky backstory or plot nonsense. We cut to the local, but unofficial, swimming hole, where four young ladies have decided to go swimming, and it's like they've never even seen a killer shark movie to know how much danger they're in, or maybe it's the irresistible appeal of cool water and the tropical heat of Montana in early fall-ish. After talking for about 30 seconds, one of them, named Skye, announces that she has to go to work and then leaves, taking their only vehicle. Seriously, what was the plan supposed to be here? Luckily, a boyfriend-type person shows up and the other girls stay and now have a ride. But after splashing in the water for a bit, they all get disemboweled by a velociraptor. Skye works at the local diner, and today her former boyfriend, Val, is back in town and he wants a cup of coffee. But since things ended badly between them, she calls her dad, the sheriff, to come chase him off. Wait, is he supposed to be her husband, not her father or boyfriend or something? Okay. Ew. So we cut to another father-daughter duo on a quiet day at home talking. And as they move into the bedroom and start taking their clothes off, I realize they also are supposed to be husband and wife. What the hell, Montana? I know limited population means limited choices, but come on! As per rules of filmmaking, since they're about to engage in carnal relations, they're about to die at the hands of a carnivore. And right on cue, here comes the raptor, who somehow got into their house, got into their bedroom, shut the door, and hid behind the curtains. Clever girl. Soon after, one of our heroes, Quaid, finds their bodies, and having heard rumors that there were dinosaurs that escaped from the mine, goes home and grabs two handguns, an Uzi, and an AK-47, making him the sanest person I've ever seen in a monster movie ever. But since it's still early in the film, and he's black, I'm just going to assume he's not going to live much longer. He hops on his horse with yet another rifle attached to the saddle, and goes velociraptor hunting. He uses a handheld Reagan-era closed-circuit security camera as some sort of dinosaur tracking device and then uses a propane tank as bait, naturally. When the raptor shows up, he shoots the propane tank, explodes, and kills the reptile. According to that one episode of Mythbusters, that wouldn't work, but all things considered, this is still one of the most believable parts of this movie, and oh my god, he's still alive. The mine owner is trying to get the mine reopened ASAP because of money. And you'd think that, as the villain of this movie, this is the part that Eric Roberts would be playing, but you'd be wrong. The owner shares his plan while pounding his fist on his desk, which if I did, I'd likely knock over my monitor. He doesn't have this worry, though, because the circa 1997 Teal Apple G3 tower sitting on his desk isn't actually hooked up to a monitor. At a meeting of the mine worker, he explains his plan to reopen the mine, telling him it's his plan to save the trapped miners. That's miners, as in the type that digs in the ground, not miners, as in young girls under the age of 18. He tells them how their handheld devices were transmitting data up until the mine collapsed. I want to know what wireless service they have, that they got a signal deep in a mine shaft, because I'm immediately switching my phone service to them, because I can guarantee you it's definitely not T-Mobile. The returned prodigal son, Val, finds himself in jail for punching the sheriff and discovers he's sharing a jail cell with his dad, Eric Roberts. It's about time he showed up. Has Eric Roberts ever been in a movie where he didn't play the bad guy? I mean, other than this one? So Quaid shows up at the mine with the somehow no longer exploded body of the raptor he killed. Again, this is the most sane character I've ever seen in a monster movie. He doesn't try to convince everyone of this crazy monster story he has. He actually offers to show them proof. The miners set charges to open up the back door to the mine using explosive charges purchased directly from the Acme catalog. When this works, it releases hundreds of raptors and one T-Rex, and later on, one Triceratops. So really, it's not cowboys versus dinosaurs so much as is cowboys versus raptors and two others. Anyway, now the townsfolks are quickly becoming snacks. One girl, who I swear was already killed at the lake, was doing laundry when attacked. She climbs into the dryer, closes the door to escape, which worked long enough to allow Quaid to bust in, shooting not one but two AK-47s, and kill the raptor. He hands her one of the guns and asks, "Do you know how to use one of these?" And she looks at him like he's an idiot and is all like, "Duh, we're in Montana." As we see the town and townsfolk in it getting slaughtered, I pick up on two very important details. First is, according to the sign in front of the bank, it is 57 degrees out, which isn't the best swimming weather. So maybe this explains why they didn't go swimming for very long? Maybe not. Two, the movie theater in town is playing a movie called Dragon Wasps, which I will now be hunting down to review in a future episode. After a long talk with Dad in jail, Val escapes to help the townspeople with the Velociraptor problem. Dad elects to stay safely in jail, and I'm sure Eric Roberts was well compensated for his 2 minutes of screen time. Val finds Skye, the only survivor of the raptor's meals, at the local diner. Everyone else holes up at the local bar. The scientist lady tells us that since they have been living underground, the dinosaurs must have adapted to breathing methane. So if you shoot them with a flaming bow and arrow, they'll explode, which of course we get to see. But, okay? So what exactly are the dinosaurs breathing now that they're above ground again? The mine owner bribes the sheriff to get him out of town safely and no one else. The mine owner, of course, winds up ditching him, though, and when he tries to call for help, he can't get a signal on his phone. So I can get a cable signal in a mine shaft in the middle of Montana and can't get a single bar sitting in a truck. Yeah, sounds like T-Mobile. Also, there's a raptor in the back seat of his truck, so he's dino dinner. The remaining survivors make a run for it, but swing by the police station to pick up more ammo first. And despite the jail cell literally being feet away, Val doesn't even so much to yell to his dad to check on him. It's like he's not even there anymore. Which he's probably not. He probably only spent one day on set and then left. Quaid gets eaten, but not before firing off his bazooka and his machine gun. So the only survivors at this point are the two pretty blonde girls in Daisy Dukes and Val. To save the girls from being eaten by the T-Rex, which was not played by Paul Walker, for the record, Val uses himself as bait and leaps off a cliff. Or maybe he saw the finished cut of this movie and jumped off the cliff. It's hard to tell. Cowboys vs. Dinosaurs is available to stream on Amazon Prime.
Silver Screen Cesspool is written, directed, and starring Alan Smithy. Assistant director, producer, and stunt coordinator, Alan Smithy. Boom mic operator, sound editing and music by Alan Smithy. Construction coordinator, The Amazing Rando. Makeup by Crayola. Catering was provided by the Soylent Corporation. Alan Smithy will be back in Return of the Curse of the Planet of the Prehistoric Bikini Ninjas versus Kingdom of the Bride of the Killer, Shark Cheerleaders 2, Electric Boogaloo.